You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Thursday, joining me, as is our custom, are Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenny. Tim joins me from McAllen, Texas, or thereabouts. Tim, what's going on?
Not a whole lot, Matt. Glad to be here.
All right. Well, that's good, because you're here. Jeff from Southern California, what's going on?
Not much. Just got off work. Looking forward to this.
Jeff? Big celebrity week for him, man. He went viral the other day when he describing getting his ass kicked by his detachment gunny in Tehran. That is, let me tell you, man, that's a straight up crowd pleaser, man.
Yeah. Well, I got a lot of stories about me getting my ass kicked, so whenever you had a slow week, let me know.
You know what? I might take you up on that because I started getting email like right after it aired, and then it went nothing but up after that. So it was certainly a crowd pleaser, no doubt. The story is just a funny story, and Jeff, as always, tells it very well. So well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I listened to it. I was listening to it in the gym.
Yeah, Timmy, tell the story.
Yeah, this is like the third time this has happened to me in the gym listening to the podcast. And I think at least one of those times was another Jeff Kenny story. But I busted out laughing so hard that people stopped and looked at me. And I said, I'm sorry. I apologize. Oh, my God. It was embarrassing.
It's funny, though.
Sorry. My friend got kicked in the balls. Who could not laugh at that?
That's not even the funny part of the story, though. Right?
That gunny was a classic.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I've had enough of this ass whooping, Kenny. How about we call it a draw? Come on, man, that is classic. And you know he didn't make that up, right? You know he heard somebody else say that shit.
Probably to him.
Yeah, to him. That's what I mean. That's why it's so funny. I mean, that's like classic Marine Corps humor there. So, yeah, it's a funny story.
When he showed up at the embassy, my buddy Mike Mango's on post one, and he comes in, he goes, hey, Corporal, there's a dead body out by the gatehouse. Is that unusual? He goes, is that normal? And Maimon goes, well, it's not abnormal. Yeah.
That's funny. But the other part of the story is the way he gets you to 3-5, which very much happened. I mean, if a gunny or a first sergeant went down to the G1 and who knew somebody, right? I mean, it was all people back then, and people got, things got modified, orders got mod, you know, got mods to them. And I know we'd see the slate of inbound people would get passed around. Do you know these people?
Yeah.
And
even in the early 90s, I remember General Kelly calling IOC, and he got me on the phone. He was asking about, remember this kid, I don't know if you were there and he went through, Mac, but General Kelly was LAR battalion commander. He's asking about this kid we had named Paulus, who knows no shit, great nephew of General Paulus.
No way.
Yeah. And so I said, yeah, the kid, pretty good, you know, lieutenant. Remember him, Timmy? Lieutenant Paulus. And maybe you were gone by that time, but. Yeah, he was no shit great nephew of General von Paulus, the Sixth Army at Stalingrad.
Yeah, I would have remembered that.
Well,
so me and Kelly, and the longest conversation I had with General Kelly was over the phone talking about Stalingrad.
No kidding. That's a nice conversation. Listen to this. You want to hear a funny General Kelly story? At this time, he's giving up command of LAR. And so, you know, they send out invitations, and like everybody we know that was at Pendleton was going to be there. So it was going to be fun. You're going to see all of our friends from, uh, all of our friends from Quantico that, you know, we worked with, mm-hmm. we're going to be there, that we're out on the West Coast. Anyway, so I go, and he stands up to make his remarks. And so, and, you know, General Kelly, he's a funny dude. And, you know, he's got the gift of gab, as we do. And so he stands up and he starts doing his remarks. And he says this. He says, you know, and he's thanking people. And, you know, and he said, and with the key wives, because that was the deal at the time, right? He said, I'd like to thank, Mrs. Lynch and Mrs. Kenny. And then he says this verbatim. He said, I'd like to thank Priscilla Presley and who've all done and made incredible contributions to the battalion. And then he stopped and he said, did I just say Priscilla Presley? And everybody says, yeah. He said, well, her name's Amy Presley. So, Amy, thank you. He said, but come to think of it, it would've been pretty interesting to have Priscilla Presley around her, huh? I started laughing. I was like, that is awesome. That is a nice recovery, man. That is a nice recovery. So, so General Kelly. Let's talk about a huge story in the country this week is what does the country do when 9 Americans are children and their parents are essentially murdered or executed, I don't know, in Mexico. Tim, you live down on the border, and you know, it's kind of interesting, a lot of the different things that I've seen in the news the last few days. At what point do you do something different relative to this? Clearly, I mean, it appears to me that the cartels have purchased Mexico. Now, Mexico can feign indignation in public and chip away at them, blah, 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 blah. But I think, I mean, we just saw a glimpse of it when they tried to yoke up El Chapo's son, and then the QRS all got called out, and the only reason everybody didn't get wiped out was because they gave that kid up. And so it gives you some idea of the power that they have in that country. So to me, it's like, okay, we'll allow you to play charades, right? But we have business to conduct, and we already purchased this country. And so don't think you're going to go back on it because you're not, right? And so just know your role. And so I'm just curious, you know, those drugs are in every community in our country. Mexico now the number one producer of fentanyl, eclipsing China. At what point do you do something different? We can talk about that. So, Tim, you live down on the border. Your thoughts on what happened down there?
Well, I was aware of that Mormon community that's down inside of a very fertile valley. I think they're about 120 miles south of Laredo, so they're about they're in the center part of our state, and they've been down there since the Civil War. Now, in 2012, Vice Media Group did an hour-long special about those guys who had battled the cartel once before. There had been an ambush and some people killed, and the Mexican government was turning a blind eye to them being armed. That was what the show was all about. You never saw that they were armed, but they were obviously armed, and they had an active defense, and they had checkpoints, and they had that valley locked down. That's been since 2012. Now, you know, you remark about the Mexican government having to basically give up against a narcotics cartel in one of their major cities. This doesn't bode well. Nobody feels tense down here on the border. You got to keep in mind, here in the Rio Grande Valley, that stuff all flows through here. It does not stop here. Now, in this valley, you've got four different counties, all of whom have judges and police chiefs and police officers in federal correction facilities because of corruption. And they're all Hispanic. But I want to make sure that this is perfectly clear. If for some reason the entire police force was Irish American, they'd all be Irish American, because it's the money involved is so gigantic and huge that nobody thinks they're going to be able to take cartel money and get away with it down here. There's feds everywhere, yet they do it every year. And so, in my mind, you've got to look at the war on drugs entirely different, and you've either got to make it a war or you've got to decriminalize the drug and start treating it like Portugal or Switzerland. There's no other alternative. Either make the de-incentivize it financially, or you decide you need to fight it. And to fight it, you need to put ground forces in Mexico. And who the hell wants to do that? I mean, it'd be nice. It'd be better than damn Afghanistan. But you know, I don't see that happening.
Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta agree with Timmy and defer to his expertise. I think that we're getting to a place here now where, you know, the idea of legalization of drugs is not going to really help. I don't think with this type of stuff, because you can't do like fentanyl and that type of heroin and like just do it recreationally. You know what I mean? I mean, you're in for a penny, in for a pound. The whole idea is, you know, that it's poison, it's tempting, and once you do it, it's so pleasurable at first that you're always chasing that feeling. So I don't know. Ooh. I mean, maybe you need to relook at it. It's like not really it's not really like a choice anymore. It's like you can't resist this, or there's a certain amount of population that just cannot resist it.
Can I push back real quick, Jeff?
Okay.
At the end of the Vietnam War, they were estimating about 25% of the troops over there were using heroin on a daily basis, and they anticipated a significant jump in heroin-addicted veterans upon their return from Vietnam. This is after they had squashed the marijuana smoking. And 98% of the veterans that came back from Vietnam never touched the stuff again. They went through a withdrawal, which isn't as severe as an alcohol withdrawal. It's basically like a bad flu, and got on with their lives. What I'm talking about is the government basically having centers to say, hey, you're a heroin addict? Come on in here. We're going to shoot you up. We're going to provide you with some post-traumatic winning style training, and you can sit here and hang out as long as you want. You just got to stay here, because if you say, well, if we legalize drugs, they'll be shooting up in the streets and taking craps in the parks and stuff like that. They're already doing
that. That's like here it is here in California.
Yeah, they're already doing that. So if you make it so the government, hey, you want to be a heroin addict? In Switzerland and in Portugal, the number of addicts precipitously dropped because they got bored of it. Half of that addiction shit is the lifestyle, and it takes a while of using those things to get truly addicted. I mean, we've all had injuries and had, well, shit, you've had to take a shit ton of narcotics. Wait, was it that hard to get off them?
No, I use alcohol, and I still am.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think the chemical hook theory is correct, and I don't think that the way that we're enforcing the drug laws is correct. And in 1940-something, when we announced this, Harry S. Auslinger took over the Revenue Department, but alcohol was now legalized. He had a department and nothing to do, so he starts going after this marijuana, and he frames it as a racist issue. If we don't go after this, there'll be white girls sleeping with brown guys because of this magical weed. And as they started leaning on other countries, the Mexican Attorney General said, "You'll turn this country will not last 50 years if you do this, because they're just going to make it's going to all the drugs going to come through here." He goes, "You can't do this to us. You're going to kill us," and we did. And we're responsible indirectly, of course, for a lot of that carnage down in Mexico. Because it's not that Americans got an unquenchable thirst for drugs. We've got disposable income. All humans like to get at drugs. I think the only humans that ever in history did not use drugs were Eskimos way up north, but they had this habit of spinning around in circles so they threw up. I mean, Jesus, who the hell wants to do that? You know,
I appreciate McClellan's writer on Stewart. The question in front of us, boys, is what does the nation do? Is this a tipping point, or is this something that, you know, we'll kind of bloviate over for a few days and then we'll get on with it and somebody, you know, it's their problem. But what does the nation do?
I have a couple things, Mac. Because of my ignorance, and I didn't know how ignorant I was, but I thought I knew more than I did until I started going into this a little bit, and then listening like what Timmy's saying, but I have to tell you this: if their government, it looks like what you said, their government is really just allowed to exist as like a beard for the true government in Mexico, and that's these six cartels or whatever it is, five of them who control these routes up there and war with each other, you know, you know, with impunity. And not only that, they are absolutely ruthless. I mean, the stuff that they're pulling down there is stuff that rivals what ISIS is doing to terrorize people. So it's like.
So let me ask you this. So what's the difference? At the end of the day, ISIS was looking to establish a territorial caliphate, right? But a stateless organization, right, that terrorizes, right, and runs its operations contrary to your national interest. So intellectual question for both of you. What's the difference between ISIS and those cartels?
Well, one's got a religious goal, a religious domination, and the other one is pure capitalist. They just want the money.
Okay, so beyond their motivation, what's the difference?
We couldn't get at ISIS until they established a caliphate and grabbed terrain and declared it as their piece of dirt that they're going to own.
They presented us with a surface. Exactly.
Yeah, once they did that, we're like, oh, okay, if you're going to stay there, thank you, we're going to come kick your ass, which was not that very, very difficult. In Mexico, although the cartels certainly own significant geographic areas, there's significant areas where they don't. There's significant areas where there's American retirees. It's a big damn country. A lot of it is not that in that poor shape. But traditionally, when the Mexican government cannot establish control of the northern territories, eventually those guys are going to start wandering across the border. In the old days, they'd rustle cattle and horses.
Okay, so what does that sound like? Ungoverned spaces in where? Africa, in the Middle East, right? Same thing. What's the difference? If they're doing real harm to your nation, to every community, yada, 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 what is the difference between one doing it with drugs and motivated by capitalism and the other one doing it with weapons and motivated by idealism?
I think the difference is they're more effective from Mexico.
Well, without,
they're doing more damage to us than the terrorists ever did.
And we can't sortie across the border and shellac anybody. The Mexicans would go absolutely batshit crazy.
Well, they could hire me and you, guys like me and you, to do it. Of course, I'd need to have a defibrillator and everything. But
my own opinion is that government is bought and paid for. And I'll tell you what, the statements that let me play a couple statements. I played them this morning on the air, but let me play one. And one, it's stunning. I want you to listen to this dude. I know this is going to piss you off, but he's a State Department guy. Let me play the guy named Whitaker. He became the Attorney General after Sessions resigned for a short period of time. So this is him talking about what's gone on and the state of the union down there.
Think about what ISIS does, and think about what the cartels do. They terrorize.
Okay, this is a sheriff who works down there, and then you're going to hear Whitaker after him.
They terrorize, they kill both their own citizens, they kill Americans. They've infected every community in this country by putting their illicit drugs throughout our country. Yeah. It's time we step up and listen as terrorists, I think.
I know you've got a lot of hard feelings on that, too. I'll get to that. The president says we need to go to war against the cartels. The Mexican president said this in response. We don't think by opening fire, massacring, using force, blood and fire, we will resolve this problem. So back to the point, then, what are they willing to do? Or maybe what can we do, Matthew?
Well, the first thing we can do is harden our southern border. A lot of the illegal drugs and human trafficking comes across the southern border, and I think the president is right in an effort to get control of our southern border, because these cartels own parts of the border south of the United States, and I think that's something that we are continuing to work on and did work on. But, this is narco-terrorism. I saw it when I visited the country of Colombia. They also have a narco-terrorism problem. And we're going to have to work with the Mexican government to eradicate it. And fundamentally, it's going to be a massive job. Their murders last year in Mexico were in the tens of thousands, all because of this failed narco state that Mexico's become. And, the bottom line is we need to continue to evaluate our relationship with Mexico and see if they are taking steps to actually correct these challenges.
And the details on this are just stomach churning. And everyone can certainly agree on that. Awful indeed. Right.
All right, that's any thoughts on what you heard, And the Mexican president, it's like, so what are you going to do?
They've been defeated already. They've been defeated and intimidated already.
Yeah.
Because 36 years, 36 years you got your ass kicked, and so now you've surrendered, and you want us to go along with that.
Yeah, that's what I heard, Timmy.
That's it. And the thing is, unlike Afghanistan or Iraq, it is not difficult to sort out who's a cartel guy and who's not as you're cruising through the countryside of Mexico. They obviously stand out. They stand out for a reason, so everybody knows that they're there. So it's not like it'd be hard to isolate these guys and put the heat on them, which I think should be gun battles and shooting them and all that kind of good stuff, because it would be a lot of fun. You're battling truly evil knuckleheads, right? But let me tell you something. Most of the killers from that cartel, they're like 15, 16, 17-year-old kids.
Yeah.
A lot of them come from America. A lot of them come from Mitch Allen. Because they speak American English and have American passports. So as these cartels continue to get sophisticated and start diverging their business practices, they're already into human trafficking, which is an emerging profit center for them. The drugs are going to come and go. We will see about that. But there's other things they expand into. If they start getting it in their head that they want to take on us, like they're terrorists, they've got a whole cadre of guys who are Americans. Who can come over here and have no compunction about killing people?
The guy
and Tijuana. Yeah, and
their main hitter was an ex-Marine from L.A., Mexican American. Yeah.
There you go. I mean, so it's a significant.
Yeah, but again, okay, I got all that. But if we decide, right, that game's over, right? Then those you're talking about they're great at murdering people, right?
Yeah.
You want to go against somebody who's going to murder you? Who's going to come hunting you, right? And I say that when I talk about peer-to-peer war, you know, and reading about the NVA and the battles the Marines had at the northern end of I Corps in Leatherneck Square, right? The NVA were going to come look for you to put your head on a stick. Okay, that's the last time that happened. Well, I mean, I say these guys, unless they're fighting each other, right, they're murderers. They're walking in to murder somebody. And it's not the same as the feeling, you know, I would think that when somebody else is looking for you, right, I go back to the fundamental question, you know, at what point do you call them a terrorist organization? At what point do you go to Mexico and say, hey, look, right, We can help you clean this up. We have electronic means. We have all cyber means. We have all kinds of things that we can apply to this. But we want to sign a SOFA agreement with you that we can drop a ROS on something. And we, in conjunction with your guys, will be right there with us because we will do this by, with, and through you, right? But you will be in there, and we're going to go kill these guys. And we're going to kill them, and we're going to kill them, and we're going to kill them. And then the ones we can't kill, we're going to hunt them, right, so that they're essentially isolated like al-Baghdadi was, like, you know, so they can't leave it anymore. And so we're going to get after these things, and we're going to try to get your country back, because clearly you have either failed or you've lost the will to do it, or everybody is on the take, because what we see from you is zero. Yeah, and zero is not fair. What we see from you is what the cartels are comfortable playing charades with, and that seems to be all. And we can't have this anymore.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. And I think what you're trying to
hold on,
drive
hold,
at Mac,
hold on, let Jeff go. Go ahead.
I think what you're driving at, Mac, is that this needs to be done. We should learn hard lessons from what happened in Iraq and Afghanistan, and for that matter, Vietnam. And so consequently, look at this thing for what it really is. These guys aren't pushing drugs and human trafficking into America because of a philosophy or an ideology. They just want to make money. So consequently, you look at how to make it so they're not making that much money. And the guy who was on who you taped a little bit, right, who said we got to harden the border. We can harden the border, and we can use our assets and resources we have to cut down the lucrativeness of what they're doing. And you can't the mistake that's made in dealing with the drug problem, and it has been since the '60s, is doing the either or thing. Like either you're gonna, you know, you're gonna counsel people not to use drugs and just say no, or you're gonna crack down and you know, and punish the pushers and stuff like that. You got to do a combined arms thing, a combined, you know, philosophy on this, and for it to work. But I have to tell you, we cannot tolerate an organization of a lawless organization that runs a country on our border. We got to do something about it.
Right, I agree with you. And again, I like that sheriff said. You know, you and I'm going to play you another little clip of audio after Timmy talks, and it's amazing. He's talking about, you know, they have 50 cals. They have surface to air weapons, and now I don't know if that means they have stingers or if they have ZSUs or whatever the hell they have. But you know, that's when you hear that, you know, and then the guy said, "Wait till you hear this." My head almost exploded. This is a rule of law violation. Like, no, a rule of law violation was me violating the speed limit and the cop in Minnesota, the state trooper in Minnesota, pulling me over. That's a rule of law violation. When somebody's attempting to impose their will on you, and as you guys both have said, the human trafficking, for God's sakes, right? And this poison that gets, you know, sent to the United States. Now I know we're the origin of it, but you cannot allow it. But you know, drugs, right, have always been a part of it. It was the mafia, you know, the classic, you know, meetings of what, the 13 families in Godfather 1, right, when Vito Corleone says, look, you know, drugs, I don't have any problem, but we got to keep it in, you know, what did he say, we got to keep it with the colors or something like that?
That was the guy from the Bronx, Cuneo, said that.
Right. And so, I mean, there was it's always existed. But I'll tell you what, I mean, when you see this going on, to me, it's horrible. And I mean, you didn't hear a whole lot from the Democrats saying anything about these murders, right? Because are they implicit in it? Because they won't touch the border, and we're to use it as a political football, right? And that allows the human trafficking to grow, which allows the industry to grow, which allows the criminal enterprise to grow. And in my opinion, they have blood on their hands because they won't deal with this.
Right.
So, Timmy.
I think for the last 40 years, we've been putting pressure on Mexico to do just that. And all we've gotten out of it is dead DEA agents who were kidnapped because they were unarmed, because the Mexicans won't allow them to carry arms in Mexico. That may have changed, but I don't think so. So I don't see that Mexico's cooperation is imminent. And I absolutely agree that, I mean, look at how that al-Baghdadi raid went. Imagine those guys hunting down drug kingpins.
Right.
Do you think that might work? I think that'd be an excellent thing to do. It would be something which the American people would completely be behind, but you got to have the Mexicans complicit in it, and they've got to invite us in, and they've been reluctant to do so. And they're not going to.
Yeah, and the last thing we want to do is own Mexico. Like, we own Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yeah, no, I just say we violate.
We got to be smart about it.
We violate their territorial sovereignty with impunity, like the cartels do. And look, hey, you can't control it, obviously. So we consider your whole country ungoverned spaces. We're going to pull the name Mexico off it and just call it the Southern Ungoverned Territory. And then we will go in there. We will go in there with impunity and go ahead. Come take a look at us when we're doing our shit and watch what happens to you.
I like that idea. I think you're right. But it's never going to happen.
Small T down there and shot two of fucking Pancho Villa's bodyguards. He's like chief of staff. And back during the 1916, you know, you don't really call it a war. What's that thing we did in Mexico?
I can't remember.
It was a punishment. It was an excursion. Hey, but my point was, just like in 1916, because what prompted that was Mexicans coming over the border and raiding cattle ranches. I'm telling you, what's going to stimulate our response is those cartels coming across the border and making off with large amounts of weapons and ammunition.
But they're already doing that. I mean, you guys, I know you guys have seen the stories where they essentially conduct a movement to contact, right, when they have to move large you know, drug shipments or something significant is going on. And you see farmers get interviewed and they say, yeah, they moved across in vehicle. They had machine guns. They secured a huge area and then they left. What the hell is that?
No, I know that. I'm talking about when they come in specifically to get the guns and ammunition. Yeah. I mean, like taking over small towns in Texas, right under some of those isolated towns. That's what stimulated the 1916 punishment expedition, and that's what's going to stimulate us to finally do something in Mexico.
Well, again, but I don't think that'll happen. I think, and this is just me after listening to some of this stuff, I think this was a mistake. Whoever did it, right, they are the cartels are absolutely rip shit at. Because, look, relative to terrorism, you can kill Americans. You can blow up a bunch of Marines and sailors in a USO in Spain. And it happened, right?
Right.
United States isn't going to come looking for you. Well, you know, we'll let the Spanish authorities deal with it. You come to the Mall of America, or you fuck up something in Pittsburgh, right? We're going to come and we're going to annihilate you, and then we're going to try to take over your country, and we're going to fuck everything up. So you're really going to pay when we start helping you, okay? So yeah, exactly. Too bad that
here to help,
right? Too bad that shit's true. But those seem like the rules of the way this shit works, and the cartel, they know that. Don't kill Americans, okay? We can decap. I mean, the story. What was the story I read where they killed, I don't know, like 30 people and put them in lawn chairs in some Mexican city in central Mexico, right? Put signs on them and said, do not touch these people or you'll be next, right? And these bodies are sitting in chairs as people are driving to work until at some point, you know, I don't know. Yeah. But it's crazy shit.
Headless people.
Right. Headless people, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Right, so, all right, let me play the second cut. And take a swig off whatever you're drinking, Jeff, because this is not going to make you happy.
Think about what ISIS does, and think about what the cartels do. They terrorize. They terrorize. They kill both their own citizens. They kill Americans. They've infected every community in this country by putting their illicit drugs throughout our country. Yeah. This time we step up and...
Oops, wrong cut. Here's this guy's name, Charles. He's a State Department guy. He's going to talk about narco-terrorism and a rule of law violation, shit like that.
It's obviously an egregious act and a tragedy, but it really reflects an endemic problem in Mexico. We have four cartels down there, the Jalisco, Sinaloa, Gulf, and Los Zetas. They're violent. I mean, they have up to, you know, they have 50 cal weapons. They have surface-to-air missiles. So the President Trump, is not wrong to describe it in some ways as a war. But the bottom line is it's a rule of law challenge, and they are testing the Mexican president, Lopez Obrador. They're trying to see what his limits are, whether he will respond, whether he will allow them to take control of their geographic corridors. And, you know, the facts down there are pretty horrific. In 2018, you had 35,964 murders. That was a 12% increase from 2017, and the numbers are higher in 2019. So I think what we're up against is a challenge to rule of law. And the United States does help. My bureau and the State Department, you know, today under Secretary Pompeo are helping Mexico, but they have a challenge on their hands, and they need to confront it directly.
Crime is one thing, but shooting a child in the back and allowing infants to burn an SUV is just beyond that.
Well, let's make no
imagine.
Yes,
I mean this isn't crime. This is obscene behavior toward other human beings.
Well, what is drug trafficking, and what is the ruthless behavior of these cartels historically? That's exactly what they do. They have no moral compass. They're ruthless, and that's why we have to take them on directly. That's why the president's discussion about keeping our border safe at our southern border safe is critical. And frankly, we ought to be joining up with Mexico in trying to get rid of these bad actors. They are truly horrific actors, and you know, they challenge rule of law in Mexico, and ultimately they're going to challenge it here.
I mean, you saw the president's offer to Mexico.
Yes.
That has been rebuffed. I mean, the FBI is offering to help. There's questions over how much help they're willing to receive. on that?
So actually, behind the scenes, we do coordinate. DEA works closely with Mexican law enforcement. Our Coast Guard and other parts of our military work with their military, and the State Department, INL Bureau in particular, is really hand in glove. The problem is that they're not confronting this as directly and as comprehensively as they need to. And I think what the president is saying, our president, is right on. And that is that we need to join hands here and directly confront this, because it's a rule of law challenge that will come over our border if we don't address it there.
Why do you say, you said that twice now, how would they challenge us here?
Well, they distribute. Listen, the border is more porous than people know, and transnational organized crime is already in this country. There are drug trafficking organizations and arms of drug trafficking organizations in every county in the United States. So it will only get worse if we don't directly confront it. And right now, Mexico is becoming the prime distributor or manufacturer and redistributor of fentanyl, as well as methamphetamines. You know, China is sort of taking a backseat on fentanyl as Mexico moves forward. They're primary distributors also of heroin. So, you know, we have major, major problems. And I think that the president is right. Our president is right to take it to them. But the bottom line is
here's what he said. This is the time for Mexico, with the help of the United States, to wage war on the drug cartels and wipe them off the face of the earth. We merely await a call from your great new president, to which you referred as a man who's being tested right now. What do you think of his response over the past 48 hours?
I would like to hope that what happens next is that the President of the United States and the President of Mexico have a private conversation, God willing it doesn't get leaked to the press, and a conversation that allows us to find a common basis upon which to tackle those cartels, because it is in our best interests to help Mexico turn the volume down on this violence. And you'll notice this hasn't been the only violent act in the last month that the cartels have pushed.
Robert,
so it's an urgent issue.
How much more do you expect that we will learn? How many more details will actually emerge from what really happened there and why this happened? The Mexican officials are saying these killers may have mistaken the family for members of a rival drug cartel. What do you expect we learn in the coming days?
So that's a reasonable assessment that this was a mistake. This was in Sonora. It's probably Sinaloa cartel involved. They do not target Americans. For what it's worth, I mean, Kiki Camarena was really the first high-level and really egregious targeting of an American in 1985. We responded very vigorously to that. Anybody can look up online how aggressively we responded to that. And, you know, there's a possibility we could support very aggressive action right now in response to this. But generally, Americans are not targeted, which makes me think that this was a mistake. But what a horrific mistake. And frankly, we don't forgive mistakes like this. We go after the perpetrators and we get them.
All right. Reactions. Tim, go ahead.
Well, I'll tell you the first thing. We mentioned Los Zetos, a drug cartel. Do you know what the origins of that drug cartel are? And I'll just answer my own question. Jeff knows.
People trained by U.S. military, man.
That's exactly right. They were the federal judiciary police that were a task force to knock off the narcos, trained in Fort Bragg, and went over there and promptly chew-hoyed. And, you know,
don't get sidetracked. Okay, you heard what that guy said.
Okay.
We're talking about what should the United States do relative to that?
I'm sorry. Outside, I again say that we can't do. I'd love for President Trump to get with their president and come to some kind of agreement where we had a joint task force and we went and started eliminating these guys, because there are some people who just need to be killed, and he's certainly fallen into that category, and everybody's for that. I mean, it would be a tremendous boost to everybody's morale in both countries if Mexico allowed us to help them. That they haven't allowed us to help them, and they're not going to, and we're not going to get involved until they spill across the border and start massacring Americans on American soil. And it's just a matter of time before that happens.
Yeah, I think Tim's right, and his point is that you know, this is an interconnected thing. The fact that it's not so clean as just, you know, Mexican banditos, you know, who are really bad coming up here and doing bad stuff down there, and it's spilling over.
Right.
We're already intermixed with this, you know? And I think, though, that you need to look at it like you need to harden the border, just like that guy before said. And this guy was a State Department guy I had on. And the truth is, the most annoying thing about him isn't, you know, his comments about rule of law, which are kind of ridiculous, you know, you're talking about that, but right. he's mealy-mouthed.
Right.
He's trying to keep it in the box.
Right.
You know, and the box doesn't exist. I think the idea of hardening the border, you basically harden the border and you make a DMZ. You know, you make a demilitarized zone that's kind of like a zone that's in Mexico, for sure, that where you can't, you go into that area, you are fair game for anyone of our, you know, you know, myriad of guys itching to get their guns off organizations we got, you know, and that is defending the country. And even just doing that and making it so you're seeing that happen, and you're still bringing, I think the idea of bringing Mexican, you know, nationals in to do work and stuff is a good idea.
Right.
You know, as long as they're here, okay, you got permission to be here to work, and that's it. You know, if you want to be a citizen, you got to do what everybody else does, whether you're from Guatemala, you know, or Guyana to be a citizen. But, you know, do that, but at the same time, that border is less like the border between France and Germany than it is between North Korea and South Korea, you know? I mean, it is control. It's like, it sends a message then. Hey, we're in this now, you know, and we're not going to tolerate it. You guys are pumping poison across. Our people are buying it, but we're working on that. And let's face the facts about the heroin thing. A vast amount of people who are on heroin now are doing it because they got hooked on prescription drugs, which aren't available anymore to them. And it's cheaper to do heroin, and who's supplying it? These they're like McDonald's of dope, except they'll kill you if you look at them sideways.
Right.
You know, that's the issue we're in now. And then the exacerbator of the you know, the age old thirst for you know, for sexual predators to have for you know, the human trafficking that's going on over there. They're making buck. And we got to stop that buck to deal with this. And when we do, there will be retaliation. And they've got imaginations, and they're not stupid. And they'll pay somebody big bucks to help them.
No, and you know when you say that, I can hear it echoes the things that you've always said about the Iranians, and that their ability to think outside the box is always, you know, always gives you cause to pause when you go down this road, because you know they're not going to take it and simply go away. In listening to that guy, that State Department guy, I wrote down, you know, the status quo will not work. He was talking about, well, the DEA cooperates and the FBI. Hey, we've been doing that forever.
Yes. Okay?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Go the fuck away with that. All right, something else has to happen, right? Our special people need to get involved in this, and I don't care if it's draining their, their bank accounts electronically through some cyber means. I don't know where they go, what they do, right? But the mission is destroy. Okay, that's the mission. It's destroy them, and I think every asset the nation can bring to bear. And again, I just don't, the Mexican thing. So give me another course of action. If you're the president of Mexico, guys, give me, if you're not going to fine them, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Will you surrender to them?
Well, I got to point out one thing, and that is, I don't know how many people in Turkey listen to us, Mac, but Jeff articulated the exact reason the Turks went into northern Syria was to control that border. I find that amusing. I just wanted to point that out.
Well, we're gonna get to that, because I want to find out how you guys feel about tank companies going back into Syria. You know, when both of you were extremely excited that we were gonna unass Syria, and now we're gonna send companies in there. So the net is we're gonna have a troop increase in Iraq. I mean, in Syria. Right, so we'll get to that in a second.
Right. But I think as far as the government of Mexico, what he is doing is trying to make accommodations with Guy, and what he's announcing is, you listen to what he's saying about how he's combating the cartels. What he's announcing is the practical man solution to an intractable problem, which is we're going to be able to pay him just enough and maybe put enough pressure on him so that they don't come after me and mine, and we're going to make sure, we're going to try to contain this within our border. But they've already ceded significant portions of their country, and it's already crippled their tourism industry. I mean, they're already crippled. And were I him, I would be talking to Donald Trump. Because it's not like we're not popular in Mexico. Mexicans got no problem with Americans, right. And we've got no problem with Mexicans. I mean, what the hell? The vast majority of the citizens around here are from Mexican American. You know, to me, I'd love to see us do exactly what you're advocating. To me, it's the only reasonable course forward, right. And because it's the only reasonable course forward, it will be the last goddamn thing we'll do.
Well, I mean, but I know, but he can't do that, right? Whoever the president, I mean, no. If you want to set the stopwatch on your life, go ahead and go down that road. See what happens.
You're right. It's got to be.
But until they get there, what are they going to do?
It's got to be not transparent.
Right.
Otherwise, he's dead. And he's out of a job, and then he's dead, you know?
Right.
But I got to tell you, that's the way this thing has to happen. It's like almost to the point where they got to get together and say, look, I'm going to pretend like you're an asshole with your DMZ bullshit,
right.
And you're going to pretend like I'm an asshole for not liking yours, but the truth is we're in this thing together. Because
right.
If I say what's really the right thing about this, they will whack me faster than you can say, you know, spit. And that's the thing about this. You know, we're like focused on our belly buttons in America about politics. As soon as the first, you know, the presidential election is over with, we're thinking about the next one, you know, it didn't always used to be that, all encompassing, but now it is. And so Trump, if he wants to do stuff, whether it be in Syria or be in Mexico, he's got to think about that, you know? And the thing about that guy is he fucking talks. He talks.
Well, let me just tell you, I mean, that's his weapon, right? He discovered, you know, notice there are no press briefings anymore. It's him every day thumping the planet, right,
yeah.
And out-cycling people. Now, it doesn't matter if it's valid or true, right? The message is pound it, right? And seize the weapon you have, which is the bully pulpit of the presidency. And I'll tell you what, I mean, in my opinion, relative to media, that guy is redefining. Right, so the next person, you know, who becomes becomes president, is going to now say, "Well, I think we'll go back to messaging through my press secretary," and then when things go sideways, what is he or she going to do? Fuck that! I'm on this shit, right? I'm on this shit every day, like D. Trump did, right? And just I'm going to tell them the truth. Right, and I'm going to call people out, and I inhabit it. So I agree. That's been interesting. I just don't see, you know. So I agree with you. It's one of those things where there's going to be posturing, right?
Right.
And that the United States is going to do things that are quote unquote reckless, and the Mexicans are going to protest, and they can like look. We're even going to go to the UN, but do not stop it, okay? Right. Do not stop it, right? And then you know when you do these hits. Right, we're going to disavow them. We're going to say, hey, they were not Mexican military people. We don't know where they are, where these death squads come from, right? And they will be American death squads. Because you wouldn't simply sign your own death warrant, right? Your kids, your wife, everybody going to die because that's what they do. That is the key.
It's like there's threat on his family, you know?
I'll tell you what would work, and I'd love the thought of this. What if we started doing it anyway? I mean, when you were talking about the El Baghdadi raid, and you're talking about the Delta guys, and I mean, that's an outfit that could go knocking down people and not talk about it. I mean, it's technically possible for us to be sending our own little green men in. You know, they go in, they take down one of these compounds, use all the pyrotechnics that they have at our disposal, and then when the Mexican government goes, "Hey, what the hell?" You were like, "We didn't do it.
Yeah, we didn't.
It had nothing to do with us."
Well, and then there would be read into it, hopefully, And who knows who it buys and say, no, it must have been other cartel guys because we didn't, look, we're not going to violate your sovereignty. I just don't know because I don't know, once you declare war on them, they're, you know, so when you do planning in the Marine Corps, you know, you get to this phase where you do action, reaction, counteraction. All right, so we do this. The way they've guaranteed their existence is their retaliation, right? The blowtorch they get out is so intimidating that nobody would authorize anything like that.
Because it's against soft targets.
Right. One thing, what would be so ideal about this is for the first time ever, we'd have language proficiency right at the pointy end of the spear. We could really throw in people who are proficient Mexican speakers by the boatload. Two is, in order for those guys to react, they're mobile, there's going to be channel points where to channelize. What do we do better than anything else? Is kick a hornet's nest, and when the hornets start attacking us, freaking laying those dumbasses out because they're stupid, because they're mad, because they don't think. No, it'd be easy to pick these guys apart. It'd be best if we did it with no deniability whatsoever, but I don't think that's possible in today's environment that we could be that sneaky. But goddamn, would it be nice to think that we could be.
Yeah. And there's a historical precedent. If you guys remember reading your history, recent history, the Palestinians started hijacking airplanes in the late 60s,
right,
putting them in the desert, getting the passengers out and blowing them up.
Right.
And then they had this guy, Carlos, who's a Venezuelan dude, right, trained by the Russians how to be a terrorist. He murdered some people. And then the Me Too thing happened in the Olympics, where it went south and they ended up murdering all those Israelis and they all died. Except for the ones who got caught, got released. So the Israelis launched this series of raids into Beirut, like 73 time frame. Matter of fact, it's depicted in the movie,
right,
Black Sunday, right?
But that
really happened. And that's what started the tit for tat that you're talking about, Mac. What will they do? Well, what they did was a couple things. One, they went into Kiryat Shemona, just over the border by the Golan Heights, part of Israel, right, and they massacred, like, you know, almost 30 women and kids specifically. And then they sent in these Japanese, I don't know how they got Japanese to do this, to just shoot up the load airport. Bunch of people just with their tickets waiting to get on airplanes.
Right.
And kill another.
That's
the type of thing, rather than part with hundreds of millions of dollars, that's the type of thing we got to expect.
And you have to be prepared that this is going to happen. And so when we go, we have to go with the full fury. We have to go with the full fury, and everybody's in. We're all in, right? And but if you're a Mexican, you say, "What do you mean you're all in? You're in Washington D.C., man. You're not out here in Jalisco. You know, you're not out here in Sonora. We're gonna be decapitated. You know." And then what's the answer to that? Hey, pack your shit, take your family, and leave. Go. You want to come to the United States? Come to the United States. Right, but because there will be no middle ground. You're going to be on one side or the other, and if you try, you know. And so I don't know. It just, you know, the status quo cannot go on. We can't simply pretend, oh, the new president of Mexico, he seems like such a reasonable guy, right? As Jeff said, he's the beard for the whole event. And if you're not going to confront him, what are you going to do? Because they own your country.
Yeah,
I don't get it. So anyway, all right. I want to talk about Syria before we end. You guys were both very much in favor, and I wasn't so much, you know, arguing against the course of action as opposed to the way it was delivered and the lack of horizontal communication, coordinating instructions, and mitigating things. Anyway, now that we're going to stay in and we're going to have tank companies in Syria, your thoughts on that?
You want to go first, Tim, or
me too? I'll go first. I like when we got out of the way with the Syria invasion, and I don't like these tank companies being in there because it's the mission creep thing. It seemed that Trump was absolutely not having any more mission creep nonsense, and then we turn around, we got mission creep. So I'm not happy about tanks in the Middle East at all. We don't need their damn oil to begin with.
I think this might be what I was talking about with the you need to go from total transparency to then a lack of transparency. The idea of tanks being in there, there's, except for aircraft, there's damn things that can go wherever they want to on the ground more than an M1A1 tank. And those guys can get in and get out. And that's a message sent. Hey, look, these Kurds got this oil, and that's the way it is, and you ain't doing shit about it. You want to have your little DMZ there, Turkey? Fine. You ain't fucking with their oil. And now I could be wrong, and I hope I'm not, and because my gut is telling me that that's what this is. Trump was always for, from the time he was running for office. Why are we telling people how many people we got here and there and so forth? Why can't we just keep our mouth? And then, but it does sometimes help you tell the truth about stuff like that, you know. But so I think that the best case is that. The worst case is it's like what you just said. It's a mission creep, and I hope it ain't.
Right. No, I was just when I started reading that, I'm like, so the net of the net is going to be increase in troops and equipment in Syria. And again, my problem with it is, look, if these are the things that we're contemplating, there's a way to do it, right? And there's a measured way to do it that looks good. It just looks like when we start doing foreign policy and we start doing Pentagon operations out of the president's back pocket. Which, and let me tell you, I hope he does Mexico out of his back pocket. I hope he just says, hey, we're doing it. If you don't like it, I don't care. I'm not about the State Department anymore. Enough is enough, right? And we've had presidents in the nation's history, Theodore Roosevelt, classic among that said, not having it anymore. Boom, right. Done. Right? And that was the only way log jams got broken. Right, relative to the Syria thing, I was just curious because now the net of the net is going to be increased, and then those M1s are going to be targets, right? I mean, we've all seen the ID stacks and the things that can stop those things and take away mobility, and that part of the world is king of that shit. And
you know, you're right, absolutely right. We got to be smart to know that if something's a target, it's dangerous that it's a target, but all you got to do is reverse engineer how you'd fuck with something like that, and you got yourself a target.
You bet.
Especially for people who are as mobile as the United States military,
right.
You know, as far as our ability, as far as our ISR and air and so forth,
right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, I remember, his name is, he retired as a colonel, his name is Baker. He was you remember him, Tim, he was instructor at AWS. He said, the Mew is great because you can land the Mew in Iran, and when they come to wipe it out, we could drop a million bombs on whoever shows up. That was an oversimplification, but
I mean, we talked about it before, right?
Yeah, right.
You would go ashore in Iran to get them the mass, which is what ISIS did for us. Right, we can't find.
That's how we used the Northern Alliance in the good part of our war in Afghanistan.
Right.
The long before my ass was ever in there to help fuck things up. That was when we had a couple guys with phony, scraggly ass beards from the Green Beret and the CIA who said, "Hey, look, if you guys concentrate, well, every time we concentrate, they kick our ass. There's more of them. But if you do it now, we're going to drop more bombs on than you can imagine." And bigger than shit, it happened. Yeah.
I don't know if you had a chance to listen to the latest Andy Milburn thing, but he had a couple pretty interesting observations. I thought about it, and I'll ask you both. I'll throw these out there, and then you guys can comment on it, and I'll let you go. The first interesting thing he said was, you know, he was talking about how difficult, you know, from the air. Right, one of the things that are most effective, and they know it, is tunnels. And until you get on top of it with ground penetrating radar, you know, we don't have an asset that can do that from, you know, 15,000 feet or whatever, right? Okay. And he said it was very interesting that they knew about that tunnel. Somehow or other, they knew about that tunnel because they went to it. And he said that was one of the things that he pinged on. The other thing was he made a comment about listening to ISIS fighters around Mosul and Raqqa, and he said, you know, they're happy to die. They will die willingly. He said, and when you listen to them, they're bitching about the same shit everybody else. He said they sound like a bunch of lance corporals. I didn't get relieved. I got relieved late, right? And then, right, they all had wives. They talked about how their wives suck, right? And he said, right, and how the local townspeople treat them like shit, right? So when you listen to them, the one thing, right, that makes them run is when their leaders desert them, right?
Yeah.
They will vacate the premises. So one of the interesting things Andy said, he said, we learned it when we were supporting the Iraqi army as it cleared Fallujah. We learned it late in Ramadi, applied it in Fallujah. That's why Fallujah went so much faster. And that is this. Identify who the leaders are, right? And Zinni says this in his PME in 1990 when he talks about the exercise in Korea and they find, I can't remember who, 5th Marines or whoever was there. They find, it might have been 1-5, they find the battalion CP and the Army guys want to work up a mission and shoot it. And he says, don't shoot it. And they're like, what? And he says, not the right time. If we shoot it now, they'll reconstitute it.
Yeah,
and
where
we go, right? Remember that? And so Andy says exactly the same thing. And he says, so what we learned to do, right, is we would locate them electronically. We would move assets there to whack them, but we would not whack them until the fight was joined and it was approaching a critical moment. And then all of a sudden their radios went silent and then they crumbled. And he said, that's what we got really, really good at. And he said, and that's why, when we first, started to do Mosul, people said, oh, this is going to take 10 years.
Yeah. Two things about that, Mac.
Go ahead.
Leap out at me. Number one, the first guy I advised in Iraq, he was a Shia guy in Iraq who was not allowed to participate in the defense of Kuwait because Saddam didn't trust his Shia guys then. But then when it was against us for OIF-1, he was shoved forward as a brigade commander. And his description of being taken down by, as a matter of fact, 5th Marines was exactly that. I was blinded. I couldn't talk. I couldn't see. They fucking whacked my, our command post. They cut off our comms. And the last thing I remember before I got captured was those things. He points at a bunch of AAVs in a park there on all the side, rolling at me, and the Marines screaming, coming out, And he gave a very good description of what it was like to be the victim of combined arms the American way. The next guy I advised, Colonel Avzal, who I think Timmy met, he had been a Muj guy against the Russians. And he said his complaint about the Arabs who came to help them, they were wanting to die. They were wanting to show that they had balls to die, right? He's like, hey, fuck dying. We want to get these guys out of here so we can go back to, running our own country. And they didn't even think it was a country. He was worried. He wanted to liberate Northern Kunar and Nuristan when he was, he was working for Massoud, he's a Nuristani. But it was what he said about those Arab guys here. He goes, yeah, they're all over about dying, bitching about everything else.
Interesting. No, Andy was really interesting. Just kind of his casual observations, me teeing open source information up and just say, hey, Andy, what's your experience with this? And for those of you who don't know, Andy Milburn, former commanding officer of Marine Raiders. And so interesting guy to have on. Again, just, what I like to do is explain a lot of stuff, have F-18 guys on when, the F-18 and F-18s in the KC-130J, explain what goes on up there. How does that even happen? I don't know. Like, how do they approach it? Right. And he explained, you go bottom left to lower right, you form up and then you lead to the right. And so anything other than that is what's going on. And so I got to answer Timmy's call. So anyway, it was interesting, but Andy was very interesting. Timmy, your thoughts on any of those things that I dropped out there relative to what Andy said?
Well, going back to the very beginning, I'm still not at all certain that the Kurds can't defend the oil fields themselves. They're very proficient with the anti-tank missiles, obviously, because you can watch endless YouTube videos of them doing just that. But the same with Andy Milburn. Now, this is fascinating because I haven't heard that. And was he saying that they would get like enablers, like snipers up, and they would or mortar teams and specifically target the one individual and then snap, punch his ticket at exactly the right time that they were attacking?
Yes.
Is that what he was saying?
Well, and again,
wow,
the means,
slick.
Right. The means would obviously, whether it's drone or whether it's, you know, some kind of, smart ordnance, but it was electronically identify this guy and track him. And then at the appropriate time, you know, that's the guy we get and everything else, you know, goes away.
Yeah, but you know, my experience tells me that if you got a chance to whack the guy, whack him, because it might go away and never come back.
Right. And you know what? And that is something I'm sure they probably prosecuted, right, on a case-by-case basis. Is this guy moving and you're watching him? No, they seem to be hunkered down in that building. And if all of a sudden, you know, like the Baghdadi thing, if he's going to go dynamic, get him now. Get him now.
Imagine applying that those kind of techniques to the Mexican situation. I mean, talk about the capabilities that we have now. Because I had no idea that we were that sophisticated tactically, able to do that with other ground forces. We're not talking about Marines doing this. This is Kurdish people, right?
No, I think assisted by, Andy Milburn was talking about MARSOC guys.
Yeah, Andy was talking about MARSOC in support of the Iraqi army, right? Learning it in Ramadi, Fallujah, right, and then becoming very proficient in Mosul and then in Raqqa. I mean, you know, how many people thought Raqqa would take forever, right? Raqqa went relatively quickly.
Yeah.
And so I was sitting there. I mean, I'm fascinated by listening to him talk. So
that's fascinating. Imagine doing that to Mexico. I mean, again, talk about the capabilities we have to influence the situation surgically.
Things that we've done to al-Baghdadi and to electronically isolate them, and they're the ones being hunted, and as opposed to being put up in these beautiful mansions with all, you know, with every, you know, with every luxury known to man, right? That now they're living in caves, they're on the run, and I don't see another course of action. I hear the president of Mexico. And it's like, dude, I'm all ears, man. Tell me, what makes this go away?
Right.
What are you going to give them? So.
Can you imagine fighting in a country where you can pull Libo and Acapulco when you're off the front lines? I mean, holy shit, man. We'll never get that lucky.
Well, that'd the other thing is that, you know, here, geographically, Mexico wins the lottery, right? As does Canada.
Oh, yeah.
All you have to do is be able to find, you know, to be able to be compete and have economic relationships with this monstrosity of the world, right? And you just got to suck enough off to rise all the boats in your country. And it doesn't seem like they can figure it out, you know? And so, I don't know.
They've got petro wealth out the ass. They've got a corruption issue.
Right, no. And let me tell you, and it's been that way for a long time. When I was, I went to the University of San Diego. The families that live in Tijuana, right, the wealthy, and when I say wealthy, I don't mean by American standards. I mean by Petro-Mexico standards. They would send their kids to the University of San Diego. Oh my God! And then they would, you know, you become friends with some of these guys. I never did, right? And girls, and they would take, you know, they would take kids down to you want to go home to, you know, to Mexico with me for the weekend? Sure, right? And they would come back like, oh my God, I've never seen anything like this, anything, and yeah, stunning. And so when what Timmy was saying in terms of wealth, and it has been that way forever.
And McAllen in this area is like a Dubai for those guys.
Really?
They own a lot of property over here, and they come here often. And it's there's been a couple gun crimes of state troopers shot by desperado loser types. Nothing to do with cartels. There's only been one issue here that since I've been there, and it was a bunch of knucklehead gunmen who thought they could walk in with their guns and get a Rolex out of the mall. There was about 500 state troopers showed up. That was over so quick, it was hysterical. So,
hey, Timmy, when you said that thing about Acapulco, I thought Timmy and me could start up a bar called Los Grandes Brazos, the big arm.
We got to tell the big arm story someday. That was hysterical.
All right. We're going to end on that shitty Spanish that Jeff just spoke. All right. Well, first of all, guys, as always, thanks for the conversation. Always appreciate it. All right, there you have it.
Highlight of the week, man. Appreciate you having us on.
No, and again, Jeff gets like 10 bells, man. I don't know how many bells is good, but however many number of bells that is, Jeff gets them for his rendition of getting kicked in the balls and his shirt pulled over his head and in Tehran in 1977. So well done, Kenny.
You're right. Thank you.
All right. More of Auburn Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Yeah, listen to that fucking shit, man. It just, like, makes my blood boil. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, the status.